You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You know, if you've been following healthcare news in recent months, it seems there's plenty to worry about, especially if you're one of the millions of people taking a prescription drug. The painkiller Vioxx was pulled from the market earlier this fall, you'll remember, because of safety concerns. Questions have been raised regarding the safety of antidepressant medications for teens, and an expert testifying at recent congressional hearings on drug safety named five other medicines he says are not safe. Isn't the FDA responsible for making sure that the drugs we take won't do more harm than good? And if so, why are they allowing these drugs to sneak through? Are they up to the task? Critics say the agency isn't keeping close enough tabs on drugs once they are on the market, so problems can be detected and dealt with quickly. And they're calling for the establishment of a new watchdog agency, separate from the Food and Drug Administration and the pharmaceutical industry, that would track drugs after they're on the market, after they've been put on your shelf. This proposal was published in this week's edition of the Journal of the American Medical Association, and for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk with the journal's editor about why she thinks a new drug safety board is needed and how it would work. We'll also talk with other people about whether this is the best plan for ensuring the safety of our drugs. And if you would like to get in on the conversation, you're more than welcome. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And as always, you can get more information while you're listening at our website, sciencefriday.com. Dr. Catherine DeAngelis is the editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Medical Association in Chicago, and she joins us today from WBEZ in Chicago. Welcome back to the program. Dr. Brian Strom is a professor and chair of the Department of Biostatistics and Epidemiology, a professor of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine in Philadelphia. He joins us by phone from his office. Welcome back, Dr. Strom.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You're welcome. Dr. Jerry Avorn is the author of Powerful Medicines, The Benefits, Risks, and Costs of Prescription Drugs, published this year by Knopf. He is a professor of medicine at Harvard Med School, chief of the Division of Pharmacoepidemiology and Pharmacoeconomics at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. He joins us from WBUR in Boston. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Avorn.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Dr. DeAngelis, you and the other JAMA editors have proposed an independent safety review board to review these drugs. How would that work, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, we didn't say that it would be separate from the FDA. Mm-hmm. We were silent on it. I think with a that I can speak for my all the editors in saying that we don't think it necessarily has to be separate from the FDA, but there certainly has to be some major changes made within the FDA. Mm-hmm. And if you'd like, I can
go
into some of that.
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's important for people to have some background information about the way the FDA currently works so that they can understand why it works like it does now. Currently, and especially since 1992, when the Congress passed the Prescription Drug User Act to augment the budget of the FDA, they charge pharmacy companies user fees. And since that time, there's been well over $100 million $1 billion in fees that have been given to the FDA, and essentially all of that money would go for and has gone for the approval side and almost nothing to the post-marketing surveillance side. The other thing is that if you look at this, you can say, well, now, this is probably good stuff. It provides more staff, and so things can get through in a more effective way. And if you look at it from 93 to 2001, the approval time for regular drugs decreased from 27 months to get approval to 14 months. You say, well, you know, that could be good. But on the other hand, when you look at what happened to the recalls, the post-approval recalls, they went from 1.5 to 5.5. Now, that to me is a big red flag that something's wrong. There's a misbalance there. Then you have to look at the fact that when you look at the staffing for approval, there are about 7 individuals to 1 individual in the post-marketing surveillance side. So that also portends of a problem. And finally, when you look at this, the post-marketing surveillance people essentially have to have the approval of the people who approve the drug in the first place to withdraw a drug. That's an innate conflict of interest, I think, because it's extremely different for, I mean, we're human beings. I'm not saying these are bad people. I'm not saying that at all. It's just, it's very hard for the same people who approve the drug to then say, oops, we made a mistake. I mean, there's nothing wrong. We're human. We make mistakes.
What would keep another safety review board from suffering the same kind of bias, in your opinion?
Well, because they would be separate from the key here. Is that the post-surveillance group or board or committee or whatever you want to call it. I just use the word entity because, right. You know, I'm not going to structure this. But whatever that is has to be completely independent of the approval side. It's a checks and balance system. And that they would have the post-surveillance team would have the same amount of resources as the approval side. The other thing is, if you look at what happened in 2003, the pharmaceutical industry earmarked $4.9 million to lobby the FDA. Now, what are the pharmaceutical companies who look to the FDA to approve their products? Why are they lobbying the FDA? And, you know, $5 million isn't chicken feed. So clearly there's an incredible problem in the FDA as it is currently constructed. And one final thing, when you look at the FDA, there hasn't been a safety officer for the last 13 months. When you look at it, the last 2 individuals who served in that capacity, the first one who left in February 2002 went to Merck. The one who left in October of 2003 went to Cephalon, another drug company. Now, that may be absolutely okay, but it makes me scratch my head a little bit. These are the kinds of things. I'm a clinical scientist, and when I see things that just don't look right or don't feel right, I pay attention to it. The other thing is that we haven't had an FDA overall director for the past 13 months. And if you look at it, 30 of the last 48 months, we've had an acting director of the FDA. So clearly there's some problems that need to be fixed.
Brian Storm has a lot to chew on there. Some indictment that she's come up with. What is your reaction?
Well, I agree with a lot of what Dr. D'Angelo said, but not all of it. I think there clearly are some problems. I think that the problem with the User Fee Act funding new drug people only and not funding the expansion of the post-approval people is a major problem. But that's been corrected. The new version of the User Fee Act will, in fact, double the staffing in the Office of Drug Safety. I think the issue of having a separate post-approval group is an interesting idea. But to some degree, I worry it doesn't really change anything because the first day they meet on a new drug and say, we're not removing it, we agree with what our pre-approval people did, they have the same conflict of interest that currently exists. So I'm not sure that's a solution. I also worry, and I will make some specific suggestions of my own, but I worry that we're giving the public the wrong impression. I think to say there's one safety problem or 5 safety problems and that this is such a shock is really providing misinformation to the public because it implies that there are not safety problems in other drugs. And there are safety problems in every drug. And we know that drugs inherently are poisons. We give them to interfere with the body's human body's function. We allow them on the market because we feel the benefits that they can have will outweigh the risks, but they have risks. They will all have risks, and I think it's misleading to say that because a drug was withdrawn, that means there was a failure of the system. I think that's the case also because we release drugs on the market with only a couple of thousand people studied. That means adverse reactions that occur 1 in 1,000 people or 1 in 10,000 people will not be known at the time a drug is marketed.
But in the case of Vioxx, there was a long paper trail on that drug.
Well, I think Vioxx in some ways raises other issues, certainly from what I've read in the press. I'm not privy to any specific situation. I think it's important to differentiate performance of individuals from performance of the system. The Vioxx issue with heart attacks was detected a number of years ago.
Right.
And in fact, I personally speak as someone who kept Vioxx off of our hospital's formulary. I think it still belongs on the market. I don't think the issue, if you talk to an 80-year-old woman with arthritis who can't tolerate the more conventional drugs like ibuprofen and say you'll have a doubling of a 1 in 1,000 risk of heart attack, but you'll have your pain relieved, which do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Most will probably want their pain relieved, but at least they know, and part of the issue here is communication of the risk. The real problem in Vioxx and the real problem in many of these situations is overuse of drugs prematurely. Vioxx had no advantage for most people who used it and shouldn't have been used in most people who used it.
Because there was another substitute.
Right. So, yeah. And as a new drug, you know that there are as yet unknown side effects because they all have them. And so a new drug shouldn't be used widely until we know more about the effects of the drug. And that's not a system failure. It's not a system failure of FDA. It's a system failure of we physicians. It's a system failure of we as a public who want the newest and greatest thing because often it's not the newest and greatest thing.
Your doctor.
Yes.
Jerry, what do you think?
I think it's misplacing the blame to say that somehow this is not about what the FDA did or didn't do, and it's not about what Merck did or didn't do. It's somehow the fault of patients and the fault of doctors. I think that's completely wrong. There's very good evidence that we had reason to worry about Vioxx from about the year 2000, perhaps 1999. FDA really blew it by not demanding that Merck get on top of this question. I'm not saying they should have withdrawn the drug in 1999 or 2000, but they certainly should have said, look, there's a worrisome signal. In your own clinical trials, Merck, you had a fivefold increase in the risk of heart attack in people that you put on Vioxx compared to another drug. You better get to the bottom of this. We want to see a new clinical trial done within a year and a half, and we want to see some observational studies done immediately. And FDA failed to look at that flashing red light signal and make Merck do anything. And to its disgrace, Merck did not come forward on its own as good stewards of its own product and say, we think we may have a problem here. We're going to be a responsible company and look into it. And it's I think, not helpful to say that somehow this shows the system works. I think it shows the system didn't work. We had, by the FDA's own estimate, maybe as many as 100,000 extra heart attacks and strokes occurring in this country that did not have to happen. Vioxx was never any better than a lot of other products or combinations of products like older non-steroidals and drugs to protect the stomach that could have been given, and it never added very much to the armamentarium of what doctors could prescribe to patients.
So what would you recommend be done?
I agree with Dr. DeAngelis that we need to really rethink the way FDA does business in looking at adverse reactions once a drug is on the market. There's a lot of other things we need to do about having better pre-approval studies that are not as small and brief as they currently are. But on the drug safety side, once the drug is approved, yes, we need to get the good folks who are doing this post-marketing surveillance studies out from under the approval people. But I guess I would differ a little bit from Dr. DeAngelis in that I think we also need to have a more profound understanding of where things go wrong. If we had a new office or board or committee in FDA, but they had the same culture of we are here to try and meet the pharmaceutical industry's need to market its products, and they were under the same political and commercial pressures that the current group is, then it doesn't matter. You know, you could put them in the Department of Agriculture, they would still have the same difficulty.
Mm. We're talking about drug safety this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. So are you arguing then for an independent out of the FDA organization?
Yes, but I think that's only the first step. It's got to be independent, but we also need to appreciate that this is there are political and economic pressures that are subjected to any governmental agency, and we need to think hard about whether our regulatory agencies ought to be captured, in a sense, by the industries they regulate. And this is not unique to drugs. We've seen this in energy and telecommunications. It's really about whether government is any more capable of regulating its industries that it needs to regulate.
So you want to take it out of government then?
Well, I think if we're going to – no, I it needs to be in government, but it needs to be – we need to understand that more is needed here than a change in the table of organization and the rectangles on the federal government's table of organization. We need to understand that this is a public health function. It's far more important even than what the FCC or the Department of Energy does, because if the FCC gets something wrong, we may have real problems in our capacity to communicate with each other, but people are not going to die of strokes and heart attacks. So we need to have this be a very highly protected group. It ought to be within government, but maybe we also need to have additional agencies outside of government that are looking for safety issues and trying to, in universities and the Institute of Medicine, that are not subjected to the same political pressures that FDA is.
And did I hear you say? And I'll ask this. Maybe Dr. DeAngelis or anybody. Hear you say that the structure now, the money that comes from the drug companies to fund the FDA's watchdog functions, is now more going to the watchdog side than they had been before.
Yes.
Yes, but you said it doubled. That makes it 7-2.
Yeah, no, it
it's a 7-2 misappropriation.
I agree.
So instead of being 7-1, it's now 7-2. It's just not enough, Dr. Strom.
I agree completely. Let me be clear. A couple of comments. Firstly, yes, it doubled. Yes, I think it is still much too little and much too small. I completely agree.
And who decides the ratio of that?
Congress
decides that.
Yeah.
So Congress has said, well, we're going to make it 7-2 instead of 7-1, because this is big business here.
Yeah, but the other thing is, let me be clear. I think there definitely need to be changes. I don't want to come across sounding as if I'm sounding that there shouldn't be changes. I think the Office of Drug Safety needs to be vastly strengthened. It needs to be bigger. It needs to have more resources. It needs to be able to do additional studies of its own, so it's not dependent just on industry studies. And I think it needs, very importantly, it needs the ability to regulate post-marketing studies. Right now, if a company commits to do a post-marketing surveillance study, they have every incentive not to do it, and the FDA has no way to force them to follow through. And that's a regulatory authority that it doesn't, the Office of Drug Safety doesn't have and needs to have.
Everybody hang on. We have to take a short break. I don't want to interrupt anybody. These are good, deep thoughts, and we need to keep them coming. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the short break talking more about drug regulation and safety. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about drug safety with my guest, Dr. Brian Strom, professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, Dr. Jerry Avorn, author of Powerful Medicines, The Benefits, Risks, and Costs of Prescription Drugs. He's also professor of medicine at Harvard. Dr. Catherine DeAngelis, editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Medical Association in Chicago. And when we last left, I think it was Dr. Strom, I think, was bringing up the point about that. Were you saying that we can't ask or force the pharmaceutical companies to conduct new tests for safety once they're out?
Almost. And again, I have four concrete suggestions that I'd like to make.
Go ahead.
Yeah. One of them is that we need to greatly strengthen the Office of Drug Safety. As I mentioned, it needs to be larger and it needs to be stronger. FDA can certainly ask companies to do such studies. If they don't do them, if they don't follow through, then there's no way it can force the follow-through. And there's been documentation of a substantial number of them end up not getting done. Second suggestion, I think we need a period of time of conditional approval. That right now, when a drug is on the market, it's on the market. They're free to try to make a blockbuster drug out of it by over-marketing it to people, most of whom don't need it, as we've talked about earlier about Vioxx. And I think that but yet we have only studied adverse reactions that occur 1 in 100 patients. I would argue that for the first few years on the market, companies should be restricted so they can't do direct-to-consumer advertising until there's sufficient information available to answer safety questions and to be comfortable that perhaps one in a thousand adverse reactions are detected, then unleash the marketing, the direct-to-consumer marketing. That also provides the companies an incentive to get the safety data as soon as possible instead of delaying getting the safety data. Third is the restriction of the direct-to-consumer ads during that conditional approval time. And the fourth is I do think there needs to be an external body. I would not have that external body take over the regulatory authority of the FDA. I think that's wasteful and wouldn't create anything new. But I think there's two general categories of things that need to be done by an external body. One of them is to conduct postmortems. When a drug is withdrawn, somebody needs to go back and say, could we have done it differently? Could we have done it better? In this case, FDA is to be congratulated. They're going to the Institute of Medicine to do that. The Institute of Medicine makes one-time reports, though. There needs to be, after the Institute of Medicine process is over and after their recommendations are complete, there need to be an ongoing process to look at every one of these each time it happens, like the National Highway and National Transportation Safety Board. When a plane crash happens, they investigate what could be done differently to protect against the next one. The second whole category of things that the drug that this external body or bodies should do is a series of activities which are not within the FDA's mission or mandate, shouldn't be. We shouldn't be criticizing them for not doing it. It includes educating physicians, educating public, trying to get people to use drugs correctly, trying to study the effects of the drugs so that it's not dependent just on industry, training people for this field, developing new methods for this field. Those activities now are underway in the Centers for Education and Research and Therapeutics, which are seven centers funded by the federal government, but the total budget for those seven centers is less than $6 million. Which is preposterous relative to the $20 billion that on order that the industry spends in marketing, relative to the over $40 billion we're about to spend on Medicare for drugs. If we're going to spend over $40 billion as a federal government for drugs, we should spend a little bit of that at least on making sure those drugs are used correctly. Those are not FDA missions, but they're critically important. They should be done outside the FDA.
Dr. Avorn?
Well, Brian mentioned wasteful, and I think as the debate continues in the next couple of months, we are going to hear a lot, especially from the drug industry, about how, oh, this is going to be too expensive. It's going to increase the cost of drugs. This country spent $2.5 billion a year on Vioxx to get pain relief that was no better, we now understand, than they could have gotten for a tiny fraction of that amount of money by using an older drug like ibuprofen with a proton pump inhibitor, one of the purple pill categories that could have been available generically. And we would have gotten the exact same clinical benefit for patients. So whenever we begin to hear about this will be wasteful, this is going to cost the public too much money, we should remember that not only did we all spend $2.5 billion a year on Vioxx, but in addition, there was about $100 million spent by the manufacturer to convince people to use Vioxx. Surely we can find a tiny fraction of that, as Brian said, to be able to, first of all, understand safety problems, and secondly, to help doctors and patients use these drugs more appropriately.
Dr. DeAngelis?
Well, absolutely. I think, Brian, if since we're using our first names and we all obviously know each other, that's fine with me. I think Brian and Jerry are absolutely correct. The basic problem is that there is entirely too much power given to the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, that's the basic issue here. And in European countries, they don't even allow direct-to-consumer ads. And, I mean, you just look in your newspapers or any magazine, and you see, you know, these wonderful athletes who look terrific, and, you know, here
ask
you go.
Ask your doctor.
Ask your doctor. And the point is, you go into the doctor, and, of course, you got your little coupon here, and the doctor can spend 5 minutes trying to convince you not to take it, or he can use those five out of his average 11 minutes that he has with the patient talking about other important things and just say, look, all right, I'll write you the prescription already, you know. So you go to the pharmacy and you get the freebie here, and you think, oh, wow, this is terrific. And the problem with that is that, you know, consumers, if the FDA says that if you have this direct-to-consumer advertising, you must have all the side effects and all the other stuff on attached to or close to that ad, a part of the ad. But if you look at it, you've got this beautiful, colored, wonderful, sexy kinds of things in the ad. You turn the page over, and there's tiny, tiny, tiny reading that most people don't even look at. And so they don't really know what's going on. So I think, first of all, we really have to address the issue of direct-to-consumer ads. The other issue here is that, you know, we completely, the way the system works now, the drug company is entirely, almost entirely responsible for collecting, evaluating, and reporting the data from the post-marketing studies. And as Brian and Jerry both pointed out, there's no teeth behind saying if you don't do it. I mean, I get a big kick out of what we think might be a reasonable penalty, if you will. If you look what happened recently in New York, there was a $2.5 million fine against the company that in that quarter made $550 million. Well, guess what? I'll pay $2.5 million any day of the week if I can make $550 million in a quarter. So I think things are entirely out of balance. And the sad part, the really sad part of this is, let's take Vioxx. I truly believe that Vioxx is a very reasonable drug for a very small proportion of people. Certainly not 20 million. I don't know exactly how many that is, but there are a group of people where, for whatever reasons, they can't take the nonsteroidals or the aspirin or whatever else. Now those people won't have that drug. You know, probably 19 and a half or more million people didn't need to take it, but maybe, you know, that small proportion who did don't have that drug anymore. And the other thing that's happening now is you look in the newspaper. I read three newspapers this morning, and three newspapers had five ads by lawyers with a 1-800 number. Call this number if you have taken Vioxx. Well, you know, this can destroy a company. I'm not saying that I feel, you know, sorry for them necessarily, but let's face it. The drug companies have made tremendous contributions. Now, I personally think they make entirely too much money, and the money's coming from the wrong source, the people. But I don't want to see them put out of business. I think that would be terrible. And so it is in the best interest of the pharmaceutical companies to get this straightened out.
We're talking about drugs and drug safety this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Before we run out of time, what about the role of the whistleblowers here? Whatever happened to that gentleman who just testified in Congress and said there are five other yeah, drugs, you know? Yeah. We haven't heard a word after that.
Yeah, we'll wait.
He's in the witness protection program somewhere in Arizona.
That's right. Just wait.
You say you haven't heard a word. I've certainly seen him on television often enough.
But has he?
With his lawyer now, I noticed that he comes with his lawyer, and he's very seriously concerned that he is going to lose his job. He's lost 20 pounds in the last 5 weeks. Just look at him. I mean, when I saw him, I thought he looked cadaverish. I called him.
Does he make valid points? Were those five drugs, or, you know, should they be restudied?
I think the most valid point is that we can all be debating about how safe or not safe are these drugs. And it almost doesn't matter whether we know the answer. The fact that we don't know the answer is the story here. That is, these are drugs that have been out on the market for many months or longer in some cases, taken by thousands if not millions of people collectively, and that there is still disagreement among people who know a lot about these drugs.
But what struck me is how fast his bosses came on to deny that, to distance themselves from it, instead of saying, hey, you know, maybe he's right.
Well, but I think there's a different issue. I think there's no question these five drugs have serious side effects. The Accutane we've known about for over 20 years. It causes birth defects. It was in the drug label from the day it arrived. The question is the risk-benefit balance, and is the benefit worth the risk? That's a judgment you make with each and every drug. FDA makes it. A physician makes it every time he prescribes a drug. Is the risk worth the benefit? What David was expressing was his personal, clearly strongly held opinions about the risk-benefit balance of those five drugs. His bosses came on and said, they disagree, and the FDA as an institution disagrees. It doesn't mean those safety problems aren't real. They are.
But that, I didn't get the impression of them saying those safety problems are real.
Well, part of the problem is what David was describing as the culture within FDA of really not having a lot of tolerance for scientists within the organization raising concerns about safety problems. And we've heard this from others at FDA, who the doctor who had concerns about the antidepressants and suicide thoughts in teenagers had the same fate. You know, don't present your findings. We don't want to hear about this. It's very unhealthy for the agency to have this culture of let's not say things that might upset people mm-hmm. about drugs, because that's not what they're there for.
Well, we only have about a minute or so left. Do you any of you see hope in that something changing here? Or you know, I know there's a revolving door in the cabinet these days in the White House. Are we going to have a strong FDA commissioner who's going to do something?
Well, we better. Let me tell you something. I was absolutely ecstatic yesterday when I saw that the FDA finally put some teeth into what they were doing and said the testosterone patch for women.
Yeah, that was my next question.
If you took a look at those studies, my goodness, if they had ever approved that, I think...
Is that a Vioxx fallout, do you think?
I'm not sure. I think they were doing their job, and it was a job. I personally think they did a very good job. But that's the kind of decisions they have to continue to make. And we really, 13 months without a safety officer and more than that without a director and having 30 out of 48 months without a director is not good. We need someone who's strong. And someone who believes in what the FDA should be doing and has the power to make things happen and has the courage to make sure that you separate the approval from the post-surveillance. And if there is an external body to analyze what happened, and I absolutely think that's a great idea, but that there has to be a strong person. And this person should not be someone who folds to the $4.9 million lobby to the FDA.
All right, we've run out of...
We need to rediscover the fact that we need public health agencies in this country and not just governmental agencies to help meet industry's needs.
Dr. Storm, you got 10 seconds.
I agree with everything it said. I think we are not doing FDA justice in that they've done a very good job given the limitations. They need some restructuring of the kind that we're talking about so that they can do an even better job.
All right. Thank you all for joining me, Dr. Brian Strom, Dr. Catherine DeAngelis, Dr. Jerry Avorn, talking about health and safety of drugs. Thank you all for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Our program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Berghoff. Charles Berquist is our director and web producer. And our interns are Corey Binns and Abby Leonard. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com if you missed any of the references. Also, we're making educational materials for them. Click on the teachers button there. Also, you can download this and other editions of Science Friday on your audible.com, your iPod, and take them to listen later. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.